You're listening to Grappling with the Graphic with your hosts, Darji and Jennifer DeRoss. Coming to you from Caves HQ, this is another Undercover Cave special, Grappling with the Graphic, episode number 2. I'm Dodgy, and with me is the lovely Jennifer DeRoss.
Hello.
And again, this is a podcast like unlike any other podcast. We're going to talk about things that are a little bit more serious than actually just comics. But today, it is a little bit lighter, a little bit more, you know, a little bit more lighter on this end. We're talking about colouring in. And before we get into the episode, I just want to send our condolences out to Florida. I know you guys down there are having some really, really tough times with the storms, Hurricane Irma. You know, we send our heart outs to you.
Absolutely.
And also our condolences to the family of the late, great Len Wein, who was an absolute pioneer of the 70s, one of the greatest creators of that generation.
And
yeah, and you know, and upon reading that this morning, I kind of had to sit in a corner because I was heartbroken because of just having to read some of his work for research and knowing how big of a name he was. You know, it was a very sad time.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the people that I loved before I knew specifically that it was him, you know, like, because of X-Men and Swamp Thing. And I mean, it's just, he was everywhere.
He was. He was more on the back end later on in his career in both DC and Marvel. And, you know, he just had his hands on everything. Like, you mentioned Swamp Thing. It was only like a couple of years earlier he was working on, you know, Wolverine and the Hulk, you know. Absolute pioneer, and you know, his legacy will live on forever.
Definitely.
All right. Okay. All right. So we'll start again, just with the context after the Len Wein discussion. So moving along, I've noticed, and I don't know if you've noticed too, Jen, but there's a lot of colouring in books in bookstores. Like, I was in New York, I saw colouring in books in Barnes & Noble, as well as Kunukaniya, as well as here in Sydney. There's colouring books everywhere. Have you actually bought any colouring in books?
I have a Star Wars one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I actually really do like the trend. I wasn't expecting to, but my mom bought me it for Christmas last year.
Oh, really?
And I've really enjoyed it.
Nice. Well, my introduction to that, I had a colleague at work, and she was sitting behind the counter, and I saw her colouring in, and I had a look, and I thought, what are you doing? That's what I said to her, and she said, oh, I'm just colouring in. I was like, and I did ask her, do you mind if I have a go? Can I colour in a spot? And she gave me a spot and I started colouring in. So I thought that was kind of fun because, you know, it looked, because she said that she did it for meditation and this was completely new to me. And this was going back probably 3 or 4 years ago. So I just asked her and, you know, it was kind of a good, you know, colleague boss relationship of just colouring in. You know, that was kind of fun. And, you know, and then when after I saw her with that colouring in book, that's when I noticed this big, there was like a whole section in a bookstore and I was like, what? Colouring in books are for children. That was my original reaction. And
I thought that too, but my mom, she does it every night before she goes to bed and she lives by it. She got me and my sister one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it was Star Wars?
Well, mine was Star Wars. I'm not sure what my sister got. I think it was flowers or something.
Well, I think you've got the better of the two, but
well, it's just what we like. My sister's never been as nerdy as me.
Fair enough. Yeah, so I mean, I really do appreciate this trend, and You know, and again, like every bookstore sells them, and you know, there must be a market for it. So, you know, if it's what you like, I would heavily suggest it. And
Definitely.
yep. And in saying that too, we've got a special guest with us. His name is Stanley Rodsky. He's a neuroscientist from the University of Melbourne with 30 years of experience. He has some amazing coloured-in books, and we'll turn it over to you, Stan.
Thank you.
So when I draw, I feel relaxed and motivated. Why is that?
Okay, well, I'm not sure that everyone who draws is relaxed and or motivated. There's probably a skill set that you have there which creates a relaxing effect for you because of your skill level. I would think that maybe a lot of people without the drawing skill would find it quite anxiety provoking, if I could put it that way. So when it comes to sort of artistic endeavors, a lot of these things need to be evaluated against the skill level required because being a cognitive neuroscientist, I'm interested in what the brain tells us, how its actual electricity and its plumbing, if you like, actually work as certain things happen for us. So even drawing plus creativity, you give someone a blank piece of paper who isn't naturally creative, it's very anxiety provoking. So you've got to be a little bit defined about these things.
Okay.
Yes.
Jen, have you got anything?
That's an interesting note. Have you done any studies on drawing or anything?
Look, we've done a lot of work around writing, and the neural processes that are involved in writing. And there's one aspect which is similar in both. Obviously, it's hand-eye coordination. Because the you know a young child learns to write and or draw by firstly learning to coordinate their fingers with a pen and their eye and start to move it around. Now, we use a big thick crayon with little children because they don't have that dexterity. So we try to reduce the anxiety about it so that the brain can start to link up these manual tasks in a part of the brain called the cerebral cortex and the cerebellum, where all of the physical movements occur. So, in an initial stage, if you like, drawing or writing is all about a skill. Now, it does provoke anxiety for some. Some people, when we start looking at the issue of moving on to colouring, for example, they find staying between the lines is particularly anxiety provoking. Or if
That's
they
me.
have to, or if they have to pick up colours which don't actually end up looking as nice as they thought they would, also creates anxiety for them. And I guess that's part of the world that I've been introducing is that if we can remove the skill aspect, then we can relax the brain. So that's why, for example, doodling. Let's talk about drawing as doodling. Doodling has no competitive element to it. It's just if you're right-handed, your left brain is freewheeling, and it's just making patterns that are nonsense with no evaluation other than your own to look at it and be horrified by what you've done. But generally, it's quite relaxing because it has no point to it. You know, it's just a reaction, you know, going from the left side of your brain to your right hand, or if you're left-handed to your right brain. And you feel quite relaxed about it. When the competitive element comes into play, the anxiety occurs. The artist who can't start, the writer who can't start, the pure terror of a blank page, These are the things that make, for example, the drawing and the art therapies particularly horrifying to a lot of people.
Mm.
That's a roundabout answer there, Jennifer. I'm sorry. But there you go.
Thank you. It was a pretty open-ended question.
That was very open-ended. So so when people see the blank piece of paper, Stan, what would you say to those people who just to give it a go? Like, where would you start?
Well, I think that that requires another part of the brain called which entices the creativity. Because mm-hmm. you've got two options, haven't you? Copy this or be creative, you know, come up with something.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the lesser anxiety is around copy this. But having said that, many of us find that particularly difficult too. And if you look at some of the older creativity books, you'll see that when presented with something to copy upside down and reversed,
mm-hmm.
They can copy very well. And when you turn it around and flip it around and you say, look what you just drew. And they go, oh, I didn't know I could draw that. Because they've in fact got the part of their brain that is involved in that has stopped them, said they can't do that. So a blank piece of paper can obviously be quite a stop. And in neuroscience terms, we look for ways to in fact create connection. So we would say just draw anything. Be silly. Don't try to, it's not going to be evaluated. Because it's the evaluation piece in drawing that stops you. You think, oh, I'd never show that to anyone.
Mm.
What on earth am I thinking? And the brain's very powerful in stopping us in that area. You know, it's habitualized. It's a physics-based mechanism which is trying to conserve its energy. And if it thinks what you're doing is a waste of time, at a subconscious level, it will stop you. It will want you to do something else. A cup of tea right now will seem like a great idea rather than put pen to paper. So getting started is a whole other area, a discussion around this world of neuroplasticity, if you've heard that. Neuroplasticity is about the way we rewire our brain. And creatives, for example, have very interestingly wired brains.
Mm-hmm.
Which jump into all sorts of different combinations and directions and pathways, which someone who follows pathways and is habitual finds almost too scary to believe. But that's probably a discussion for another time, because I can talk on neuroplasticity and creative wiring again.
Well, when the time comes, we'll happily take your offer on that one. I just got a question for you. Where did you get the idea of creating, creating these books in colouring, and what inspired you to write such a book?
Yeah, look, I think that it's the world's coming together. Neuroscience, for example, is anthropology. It's physics, it's psychology, it's anatomy and physiology, it's philosophy. Now, I say that because we're talking about the brain and we're talking mm-hmm. about the mysteries of it. And there are so many answers to it that come from so many different areas.
Yep.
And I think that one of the answers that I was looking for as a neuroscientist was very much in this world of mindfulness, relaxation, meditation. We know the brain needs to be quietened. We know that relaxation, meditation, mindfulness, all of these things are flying through our stratospheres at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But we live in a digital world in which there's how much time do you have left over to go and do meditation for an hour or
of course.
Go to the gym for an hour or... You know, we're all so busy in this. You know, from the moment you wake up to the moment you finally fall asleep, you're turned on.
Yeah.
So the world of digital world and the techniques that we've been looking at didn't seem to mesh to me, mm-hmm. or mesh. And so there was a growing movement around creativity and around colouring and painting called creative therapies. Mm-hmm. But they didn't really serve my purpose because, how I started, the segue into where I started is those things are incredibly anxiety provoking to many people, just as meditation is. Mm-hmm. Oh, the doctor says go and meditate. Oh, really? What does that mean? How will I do that? How will I find the time? I don't know whether that works. I feel like I'm being stupid or silly.
Yeah, I know.
This brings an idea. Please, please tell me where is the pill I can take. So in my world of neuroscience, and I was working with, at my stage in my career, where I've been working in these areas for over 30 years, and neuroscience in particular for the last 10 years, it just seemed to me that neuroscience had a very non-technical, so I work in some very technical areas, some very high gizmo areas, if you like, where you're putting all sorts of things on people's heads and into their brain. But there had to be some low-tech solution for this high-tech work.
Mm.
So I started to experiment with a number of my patients at that stage who had ADD or attention deficit disorders or autism or on spectrum or were depressed or anxious. Or all of the above, because for most clinicians, it's a matter of pick a point to start and let's work from there. And so I experimented with an idea, which was, if I can tap into the brain and calm it using some of these neuroscience principles. Now, here they are. The brain loves repetition.
Yes.
The brain loves pattern. And the brain loves control, that is definition. And to me, that became a matter of converting that idea not into pictures of superheroes and colouring them in, or pictures of artistic scenes or the Madonna or villages or whatever you have, but actually turning them into these patterns that are through their repetition and the use of colour in a controlled stay between the lines,
mm-hmm.
what might happen to the brain. So I put on, being a neuroscientist, I have access to ECG, that's heart rate to the brain, and EEG, which is brain wave measurements. And I started watching my clients as they coloured in these particular patterns. And the effects were demonstrable, quick, and amazing.
Mm.
So all of a sudden, in 5 minutes, you would see the brain quieten. It was equivalent in those early days to 30 minutes of someone practiced in meditation. Now, I'm not against meditation. I love it. I love yoga. I love mindfulness. I think these are all, I love hypnosis. All of these brain processes that can be accessed through these tools are brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. But we live in a digital world with little or no time. And most of my clients would say, I don't have time for all of that.
Yep.
And they would use other adjectives with it. And I'd say, well, I tell you what, why don't you try this? I needed a lot more of these, so I put together these books, which I could use in my practice. And then of course, you know what happened next. It just became a phenomenon.
Absolutely.
Which eventually led to the three biggest of my books being taken up by Oprah Winfrey.
Yes.
And they were on her 2016 Christmas wish list. So because it wasn't about colour or art therapy, it was about a technique that you could use before you go to bed and before you go to sleep to deepen mm-hmm. your sleep, or to use during the day as a process. You know, you don't have to finish the page. You just have to create a pattern using color.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get into my books, you can see that I've even got some notes around the colors you use
mm-hmm.
to engage the brain in being more relaxed or even more heightened, more alert. You know, I had some students in England contacted me and they said, look, they get quite relaxed before an exam, but then they don't seem to be able to really get going. And I said, well, take one of the pages and focus on using orange and yellow,
mm-hmm.
Which would spark the brain up students who become very tense. And I say to them, use blues and greens before you go into the exam. But make sure you create the patterns. Make sure that through those repetitions, and make sure you stay between the lines and tell your brain to relax or tell your brain to sharpen up, whichever way you want. You've got to tell your brain what it is you want to do. It's called intention.
Exactly.
So intention is an important part of the meditation world, for example. Now, you can't just hope it understands what the hell you're doing. So these books were meant to be a 5 minutes, open it up. It's a process. It's not an end game. It's not something for you to run around and show people how wonderful an artist you are. It's meant to be a process. And we've linked that now with auditory parts of the brain. So you go to the colitation site, you'll also see we've got some auditory. We can create brain alpha waves, which are pre-sleep waves, to actually reinforce the colouring that's going on as well. Mm-hmm. So look, there's some exciting things going on. Anyway, that is the longest answer I've ever had. there you go. You're probably thinking now, my goodness, we'll need to stay up for 2 hours. There we go.
So I've just got one question. Tell us about brainwave frequencies relating to sleep. You did touch a bit on sleep before, but what part of the brain can actually, because I know a few of the listeners out there might actually have trouble sleeping. What advice would you give?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, use these books. It would be a good one because right now we are engaged. Our brain, if I put a EEG and an electroencephalogram onto our heads, that is a couple of these days dry sensors on the scalp and around the left ear, I would be able to monitor your brain waves. And the three of us, assuming Jennifer's not asleep already, if she is in fact awake and with us, then she'll be in what we call beta state. Now, beta is alert, ready to go, processing. So right across the cortex, which is all of the spaghetti bolognese on the top of our head, it's busily operating in a chemical electrical interaction. So the oxygen and the glucose are combining in your brain across your neurons. They're creating an energy spark mm-hmm. to deliver hormones. So these passageways are operating at approximately 30 cycles per second. When we're watching television, probably not Game of Thrones, but when you're watching, say, some other silly show, which is relatively just flies through your head, we're in what's called pre-sleep, which is about 10 to 15 cycles per second. And that's called alpha. Alpha is when you relax. Alpha is what's created when you colour in. Alpha is what happens as long as you don't get digitally excited, and by that I mean digitally as in your digital operating devices, your iPads, your phones, your computers.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're not engaging the brain in something there, you know, like reading, there's something for you to do, or colouring, you can bring your brain into alpha so that it can then prepare itself for the theta and other levels and deep sleep levels. by colouring, you get in through the problematic alpha phase for most people that don't fall asleep easily or wake up easily and can't fall back to sleep easily. Mm-hmm. Use the colouring books. You'll find an amazing change in your sleep patterns. There you go.
Fantastic.
Very cool. So you've talked a little bit about stressing, test stress and sleep. What about your work with athletes?
Yes. So the interesting thing here is that I've been working, my general title these days is a peak performance neuroscientist. So I'm working with well organizations and well people who are trying to convert, if you like, the pressure to performance rather than the pressure to stress.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the feeling you get to a deadline, you've got to do it, you've got to deliver. That can become stressful, and when it becomes stressful, it zaps up your energy and you do a lesser job. So
yep.
In the world of athletes, that's the same. How do I get that little bit extra out of myself rather than they'll still, you know, the elite level still do a good job. They still do well. But third isn't as good as first.
Mm-hmm.
For them. I know that all of your millennial listeners will say, you know, you can get a trophy for any level. And I'll buy that. But there are some people in the world who like to do things and win.
Yeah.
Now, I make no value judgments on that. That's the world they live in and they wish to live in. So the idea here with the colouring books and this sort of neuroscience application is that a thing called coherence. Now, coherence relates to the autonomic nervous system, which is made up of the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. I'm sorry to all your listeners whose eyes are now glazing over, but that's an important concept because the autonomic system, in fact, can be manipulated the most through your breathing. So you're breathing mm-hmm. out, and that's why meditation and all of the relaxation therapies use breathing because you're trying to manipulate the subconscious system with your consciously altering your breathing. So in coherence, it's about making sure that your breath in is shorter than your breath out, because the more you have this coherence, which is a reverse to what you would expect, but it means that you're in fact relaxing more. And the more you relax before you perform, the better you'll perform. It's like, well, I've been pushing myself hard the whole time and now I've got to perform that little bit extra. What's the likelihood that that's going to happen? Well, it's zero. If I've in fact learned how to relax myself before an important kick or pass or throw or hit or movement, then I in fact have set my system up to perform that little bit better. If I move into the world of drawing, let's say, in your, you know, that sort of background that you have, how on a particular day do I come up with a fantastic drawing and another day a good drawing but not my best?
Mm.
How can I get there? And my answer to that is that you need to, before you put pen to paper, I would be saying in the next 5 minutes, colour, use the breathing, listen to sound, get yourself prepared before you put pen to paper, before you push yourself and say, okay, I've got to go now. Now, so the pressure comes on, the sympathetic system, the physical system pushes up, the adrenaline goes in, comes the cortisol, your brain gets ready to perform, and then it does it, and then it relaxes again through the parasympathetic system, which releases the dopamines and the serotonins. So there you go. Neuroscience 101. You no longer need to take that subject in the first year, psych or neuroscience at uni.
Yeah, I've been taking notes, so I'm all good. Thank you.
And you're all good?
I've taken those too.
Okay, because I'm suspecting there are a few students amongst you there.
How do you feel when you see colouring books now become more popular in the shops, considering, you know, that's...
Yeah. Please continue, sorry.
No, I was going to say, how do you feel?
How do I feel about it?
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I feel good about it because I think that I don't feel good about it at another level. Let me talk about the feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
That is that people are connecting that there's something useful and positive about colouring to help them relax. And I think that's a good thing because they don't have to be creative. They don't have to go to art therapy. They sense what that's about. The bad side of it is that it's actually a lot of books that talk about the neuroscience of it or the relaxing of it or the mindfulness of it, but they haven't quite got that the key in here is in fact that it's got to be a non-competitive task first up.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a drawing of something, it's automatically a competitive task.
Yeah.
You want it to look like what it's supposed to look like. My second point in there is that often, and I guess the some of the images that have been running around in the past do have repetition and pattern and control about them, but they've not really been seen for what they are, and that is this is a process. You know, it's not about finishing the page. It's about for 5 minutes just losing yourself in the colouring through setting up a pattern, using colours which can effectively help you to relax the brain. So it's good on one level, but it misses the point on a lot of other levels.
So in a nutshell, people should be buying your books?
Well, look. That sounds incredibly crass. Look, I'd love them too, and I'm glad to say a lot of people have. But I think a lot of people buy into the science of what we're doing, and I'd like them to do that. I'd like them to see that this is a process. In that, let me just show you where this is going in terms of the science. The University of New Mexico. Is currently running a program using my drawings.
Congrats.
And I've allowed them from the books. And they're using them in the mathematics faculty.
Mm.
And the reason they're using them in the mathematics faculty is that they have found that if they can and they actually give them 5 minutes beforehand, before their algebra tests and their higher mathematics. They're using it mainly in their introductory mathematics program, so they're sort of bringing them up to speed before they go into the higher level mathematics stuff. But they're saying if you spend 5 minutes colouring in this sheet, you get 5 marks.
Okay.
For the next 5 minutes of colouring in, and then complete your algebra exam. The ones who do, you know, now you can see that in this case, they've actually said, we want you to do this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So spend the 5 minutes on it. Don't just jump in and do all the answers. Because prior to that, they've done a study that showed they had algebra tests, kids who did the colouring versus kids who didn't do the colouring. Now, I wouldn't be going through this example. It's so predictable what I'm about to say, isn't it? Because why would I tell you it failed? It's quite true. In fact, it had an astounding result because the brain relaxed. When the brain relaxes, it opens up a part of the brain which holds all the hippocampus, which holds the memory. In other words, mathematics is rules. There's nothing creative in it. It's rules.
Yeah, that's true.
When brackets go around things, when lines go over things, when certain signs are introduced, when you know they're all rules which mm-hmm. have to be remembered.
Yep.
When they actually coloured the brain settled and they remembered the rules and they performed significantly better than those who just went straight into the exam, nervous as hell, because that's most, you know, the good ones don't care because they know they're good and they'll do well. But not everyone sitting doing mathematics in university are good mathematicians. You know, they like it, but they get tense about it, you know, and it's hard mm-hmm. and what have you. So there's a good example of why these books can be very helpful. I'll give you a second American example for you, Jennifer. You wouldn't believe this, but I've been contacted by the neurologists in America, and particular neurologists operating in very avant-garde areas of brain technology. They're the people busily doing some really, to us, scary stuff of, you know, sort of putting electrical impulses into brains, embedding all sorts of technology in certain parts of the brain to start stimulating it to help all sorts of neurological disorders. And they contacted me because they found the most effective and valuable, if you like, complementary process with their patients were these colouring books, because of the way that they actually help their patients settle their brain following and during and even pre these procedures. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, very fascinating.
Very fascinating. That high tech with low tech. There you go.
So you've talked a lot about colouring, obviously, but are there any other creative activities that you think can provide those sort of benefits?
Sure. As long as you remember those principles.
Yeah.
Non-competitive is like as long as you're knitting for yourself and you don't have to show anyone. Or you're good at knitting. Knitting is a, you know, an age-old process for relaxing the brain, for example. Gardening is a good one. There are so many very woodworking, all sorts of things that involve our hands and us going, getting ourselves lost in a activity which we can do mindlessly but effectively. But guess what? You go and buy your scarves and jumpers. You now hire gardeners. We go and buy everything that we might have once made for ourselves. And if we want to fix it or clean it or brush it up, we have someone else do it for us.
Yeah.
In other words, all of the things that we used to use, because that to help us just take ourselves offline for a minute, mm-hmm. just go and relax doing that. You know, it has a task to it, sure. But most of the time, you know, we get through half of it and we'd feel quite happy and we go on. Now we're not happy with that. We even have people walking our dog.
Yeah.
You know, moments where we could have just really just de-stressed, really got our brain just nicely loosened up are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am now force-feeding into the system something which is 5 minutes in duration, do this at your desk, do this before you go to bed, fit it in somewhere along the path to actually deal with this very, very busy world we're in. Because I'd like to sort of say that, you know, our brain in its current formation, and every neuroscientist you talk to will also be here with me in this regard, is we don't yet know the full consequences of a brain like ours, which is being digitally attacked. That is the digital world with its huge reliance on it being opened and performing is going to have in terms of effect.
Yeah. There you go. Wow, that was really interesting. Very interesting. Okay. We kind of touched on a few of these questions already, But I've got a fun question for you. Which comic book character do you see yourself as? Or best represents you? It could be from a movie, it could be a TV show.
Okay.
And why?
I've got to dig into my... Do either or both of you remember which part of my brain I'm digging into now?
Will it be the frontal lobe?
No, I mentioned it. The hippocampus.
Oh, the
hippocampus. I'm now digging into my frontal lobe is sort of dealing, you know, with the executive order. It's sort of saying, go and find an answer to this. So the first thing it does is it looks inside itself into its memories to see which one. Look, I'm not sure whether the one that quickly and completely comes back into mind always, because I grew up with this superhero, is Superman.
Yeah.
Classic.
And why is that?
Well, I grew up with Superman.
Oh, okay. So he's part of you, basically.
I'm 63, so you're talking about black and white movies and the comic books.
Yeah,
black and white movie, but black and white on TV.
Mm-hmm.
The original Superman series, and I remember that was the big jump from me. I suddenly had comic book on TV.
Yeah,
I remember.
And but all of the Phantom and all, you know, all of those were part of my world. When I was a young fella, yes.
Very cool.
That is pretty cool.
There it is. That's the fun bit.
Absolutely. Well, Stan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. I hope that helps. And www.colortation.com, and they can read all about the research and see the books.
Fantastic. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to Grappling with the Graphic. It is an original Undercover Capes podcast. Check out our other amazing content on undercovercapes.com, as well as our parent company, comiccrusaders.com, for all things comic pop culture, for fans, by fans.
Rhode Island Comic-Con returns November 10th through the 12th to the Rhode Island Convention Center and Dunkin' Donuts Center. Here's your chance to meet Marvel actors Mark Ruffalo, Sebastian Stan, and Paul Bettany. Meet the precious Andy Serkis and Elijah Wood. Daryl from The Walking Dead, Norman Reedus. Rock out with Gene Simmons at a Sunday evening concert. Comic artist cosplay and the Ink Fusion Tattoo Pavilion. All at the biggest show in the smallest state. Buy tickets now at ricomiccon.com, the Dunkin' Donuts Center box office, and all Toy Vault locations.